this week on the Inside Flap.
And the idea was you take them out of their environment and you put them up here and you keep them there for a long time. The women who were arrested for prostitution or loitering or, you know, maybe just or drinking, suddenly ended up at this place. And instead of
in
like
the middle of nowhere,
they were like, no, we're going to keep you here because it'll be better for you.
Wow.
The sword is faster than the eye.
Do they have a smart suit?
They have a smart suit. And when the sword, your goal is to like, I guess, hit the other person's suit.
Stab them.
And the, it's a electrified. I don't know what it
is.
I
don't know how that works.
It's
either.
Like you sang My Battleship. You were the first person to touch. I don't know how it works, but they got to be. What? How can they not come up with a battery pack that they can wear? They got to be tethered? This makes no sense.
I did see one woman get
so
tangled up. She got tangled up in the cord a little bit.
It's so distracting.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this Inside Chat edition. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room, to my right, is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Thank you for listening and tuning in to our latest edition of the Inside Flap Book Podcast. Got a great guest for you today. We're joined by Carol Goodman, award-winning, best-selling author of 25 novels, including The Lake of Dead Languages and The Stranger Behind You. Her new book is out now. It is titled Return to Wildcliff Heights, and we'll have some more about that and our conversation with her in just a second. But first, Laura, we've been watching a lot of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I have mainly, the thing that has impressed me, and which what I was not ready for going into it, is the rugby. They actually,
I know,
how much
the
fun
the women's
has it
rugby
been?
In particular.
Yeah, well, both the women and the men, but
yeah, I've seen more women than I have men.
But well, yeah, of course, as you are wont to do. but the action is so fast, it's so exciting.
It is rough.
The athletes are so
muscular. Also.
They are. It's nonstop action.
It's good to watch. It's fun to watch.
And the games are short.
It is
like you can watch an entire game.
That's
and you're like,
what
wow.
we like.
Okay. And they play two matches in a day.
It's so short.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the great part about
That's
it. Like
true.
You can dip in and watch a whole game and dip out and still have time for dessert.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it is amazing.
The other thing I'm struck by, and I'm struck by it every, I guess, 2 years when the Olympics come out, but mostly for Summer Olympics because you can see it more, is how the human body with these Olympic athletes is really shaped by whatever that sport is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's possible as a young kid, like, oh, they're stockier. They're going to be better at whatever it is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's fascinating to see the human body just like shaped by
the years cycling, and years of abuse. That
by
they,
whatever
that
it is that
it
they
through.
Do.
Yeah.
You can almost tell. And it'd be kind of a fun thing, I think, to get like even the freaks of nature, the NBA, you've got 7-footers out there.
Right.
It would be fun to see them all lined up.
Oh, and you could guess what sport they're
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it just would be fun. Like the littlest to the biggest. You
Having
know?
Watched some of the archery competition, you would never be able to get, I mean, you could tell by their face, though. We had that on the other day. Oh. You noticed something interesting.
Well, no, the Japanese team had like kabuki makeup on.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was a nod to their culture.
I don't know. That sport looked tough because you got to, when you pull the string back,
really
you
hard.
Put it up against your face.
Yeah.
And like they had bandages on their face where they were like pulling the string,
I didn't notice
the bow,
that. I
like,
did not notice
right
that.
Onto their face.
Oh, maybe that's why they had the.
But the makeup is on the entire face.
No, and no other team
no,
had that.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I think it was a nod to their Japanese culture.
Harry maybe,
Bush.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
That could be. Mayhaps it was what I was been watching this morning. Not impressed with the skateboarding that's
no,
going on.
No, but the thing about skateboarding is the Olympics has a very low bar for the tricks. It's like kind of, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
You're not going to see what you see at the X Games.
Right, but why? It's the Olympics, though. You want to see the best
know.
Of the best. That's
I don't
what does,
understand
first
it.
Of all, The men I was watching this morning, they're too clean cut. Okay.
Oh.
They need to, you need to see guys. They should be out there.
I saw tattoos.
They should be vaping. They should have long hair. They should, the one thing, the one little nod, and it was the snowboarders who started this years ago with the AirPods. Right?
Oh.
So I literally saw this guy.
I saw this guy too.
Take it, have so much trouble with his music, and it took him longer to put his music on than it did for his run.
I didn't see
and that's
that.
The problem. They're grinding down a rail. They do a rail and they grind the rail. It lasts 5 seconds.
Yeah.
The entire run for a gold medal lasts 5 seconds. It took him longer to pull out his music, his phone, and select a song than it did for the entire run.
That's funny.
And half of the men fell on their butt.
Well, I was up with the
half.
I'm gonna also say, if you ever want to get a puppy, I would recommend getting it in the summer.
Yes.
And if possible, get it during a 4 year, every 4 years, I think, would be the Summer Olympics.
Right. Because you want to have something that you can just
something
have in the
that
background.
You can just have on.
And watch and still be, and yet still be entertained by.
While you hang out with the
while
puppy.
While you hang out with the puppy. But yeah. Something you can dip in and out. Right. You can't just load up Godfather 2 and have that on and watch that with the puppy.
Funny.
You got to be able to get in and out.
Yeah. 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 I saw the skateboarding. I saw.
Not
I mean,
impressed.
He was falling constantly.
They kept falling.
It was kind of...
And how can you give a gold medal based on a 5-second run?
No. I think the X Games spoils us because the X Games are really cool.
Right. Well, in these kind of events in the snowboarding, it's the same kind of thing. In the Winter Olympics, it's fantastic.
I was thinking that the snowboarding's great.
But the skateboarding, they're not going in bowls. They're not like doing tricks. It's just they were just jumping up on a rail and half of them falling on their backs.
Because they're doing higher end tricks probably in real life. They're not doing the basics.
And I did a little deep dive and they're like, well, you don't understand. They're doing a backhanded flip and toss. And I don't understand.
Hard to
know. The common person doesn't understand all this. So I'm sure what they're doing is worthy of being on that stage, but you gotta, it has to be a spectator sport. I'm looking forward to the break dancing. Did you know break dancing is now?
Yeah.
My friend
saw
Dave
that.
Thomas is complaining about this.
Has he seen it?
No, because it hasn't debuted yet.
Oh.
It's August 4th, I think. They're going
to
debut it.
We have a ways
it.
To go.
Yeah, we got a little ways.
Oh, we might get a VP from Kamala Harris and breakdancing on the same day.
There you
it's
go.
Too much for me
too
to
much
take in.
To take in. Ballroom dancing has been a sport. Why not breakdancing?
Yeah, I don't understand why.
What they're doing with the breakdancing, it's incredibly athletic.
I have no problem. He doesn't like that it's a sport?
He doesn't like sports where they have to be judged.
But isn't that gymnastics, too?
Well, yeah.
And does he not like gymnastics?
I don't think he is. His hatred of it has escalated to the point that it has for me.
You don't like gymnastics.
I'm not a fan. And I don't think I'm a fan of it because they shove it down my throat. So if you put on
it's
NBC
really
in prime time, that's all you're going to see. That's why I love the Gold Zone package on Peacock where they dip in and we've seen everything, a little bit, even equestrian.
Yeah.
You just dip in, you get a little taste of it and then dip out. And if there's a gold medal match, they'll bring that up.
Yeah.
NBC at night, it's all... gymnastics.
Back in the day, when I was a little girl, it was Nadia. What was her name?
Nadia Comăneci.
The Romanian. Like
it was always the Americans and the Romanians.
Yeah, with Bella
and,
was her coach or something.
Yeah, and it turned out he was, doing terrible things to all these girls.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Did they defect? Am I making that
I'm
up?
I'm pretty sure it was him with the Mary Lou Retton and all that
Mary
stuff.
Mary Lou Retton. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we have a terrible history of that then,
we
too.
We do,
because that was also our current.
We had all kinds of terrible things,
I didn't realize that. But as a kid, female,
right.
I like to see the sprinters, because the female sprinters were flashy.
Cannot wait for the sprinter.
Very flashy.
Michael Johnson with his gold
shoes.
They
had pretty, I was more interested in the women being a little girl.
And Flo-Jo with the nails
Jackie
and the hair.
Jackie
Joyner-Kersee.
I liked all of that. I liked the hair, the nails. I thought they were very beautiful. And then I also thought the same thing of the gymnastics women, not realizing that I probably at 10 was taller or the same height
right.
as them.
Yeah.
That was shocking.
And
the first time you
at
saw...
At 10, you were twice their age also.
No.
They're very... the women's skate... Quote, women... They keep calling it women's skateboarding. The gold medal was won by like a 13-year-old girl.
Oh.
But the men are like in their
20s. They looked old.
So I don't understand the dichotomy between the women skateboarding and the men.
Hmm.
But all the women are girls. They're 12, 13-year-old girls.
Here's a podcast called What We Don't Know.
What We Don't Know. We need that. A lot of fencing. They've been showing a lot of fencing as well. Mm-hmm. We don't understand why they have to be plugged in, apparently.
I think what you're saying, where they can...
So the sword is faster than the eye.
Do they have a smart suit?
They have a smart suit, and when the sword... Huh. Your goal is to, I guess, hit the other person's suit.
Stab them.
And the... it's a electrified. I don't know what it is.
I don't know how that works.
It's
either.
Like you sang my battleship. The first person to touch. I don't know how it works, but they got to be. What? How can they not come up with a battery pack that they can wear? They got to be tethered. This makes no sense.
I did see one woman tangled up. She got tangled up in the cord a little bit.
It's so distracting, and it's not as you know. It's like it's almost like the cord looks like it's pulling them back.
Yeah.
And then they got these masks. You can't. I don't like a sport where you can't see the person's face.
I've never liked that. The best. Like we've said, the best sport so far is the rugby.
Yeah, you can really see their face.
Really fun.
Love that.
Swimming is not as interesting.
Swimming also, you can't see their face till the end.
Not super interesting either.
And they're also cluttered up the whole thing now with stats. So I don't need to know how fast they're going at every when they're swimming. You know, they show the big flag, they show the name, they show these stats, how fast they're going.
I like the gymnastics. I'm going to put that out there. I like the gymnastics. Okay. I like Simone Biles. I like seeing her.
I do enjoy watching Simone Biles.
She's fantastic. I didn't get to see it last night, but I got to see her floor routine on Instagram this morning.
Oh, okay.
And
good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
When you're
incredibly athletic.
Heads and tails above everybody else.
Yeah.
And they're literally naming stuff after you. Yeah. That's
true.
Enjoyable to watch
someone
who's transcendent.
That's true.
In their sports.
The men's gymnastics could care less about.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Not as flashy, not as attractive to look at,
maybe.
Yeah.
Also, the thing that annoyed me about the fencing, so they wear the masks, so you can't see their face. Some countries, U.S., they have their flag on the thing. But I'm thinking, if you want to intimidate your opponent, why not put like a demon on there or something? Or put like Freddy Krueger or something on there. You know what I mean?
I know, but it's the Olympics. You got to represent your country.
I guess so, and I understand that, and
yeah,
you know,
that's
a lot
good idea,
a lot
though.
Of USA chants, which it still kind of raises my hackles to hear the USA chants. I should enjoy watching my country, but
the people that dress up in it maybe are a little much.
Politics have kind of soured me on jingoism.
Oh, I see.
You know what
jingoism.
I mean?
Look at you. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
How about that? And even when watching the basketball, it might be hearsay. Or Hersey?
What are you talking about?
It might go against... I was rooting for Serbia.
Oh, because of Jokic. That's why.
Yeah. It's different.
We're Denver Nuggets fans.
So
we're going to root for our guy.
I definitely was rooting for Serbia.
Yeah. I mean, when we saw Canada play, we were rooting for Canada because of Jamal Murray.
Right. That's true. And which, by the way, those of you who saw Serbia lose by 26 to the U.S., when Jokic was on the court, it was a tie game. The few minutes where he was out, Serbia down by 26. So as long as he was on the court, they played the U.S. for a team chock full of our all-stars.
Sounds like the Nuggets.
To a draw. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And that's
I'm sure all of our listeners are into watching the sports as we are.
Yeah. And the,
that was a joke.
I wonder. It's the Olympics. People watch it.
I don't know. Maybe they do. I don't know if
are you out there? Or you, let us know at the inside. Are you watching the beach volleyball?
Now
We like the beach volleyball. That's
exciting. I love the beach volleyball.
You pointed out a little bit of a double standard for the men and the women.
Yeah. Well, the women are always in bikinis
right.
with very high cut bottoms.
Yes,
and the men are out there in shorts.
No, how about you take the shirt off? You know, give the women
did
a little something
to shirt?
Look at. Yeah, they wear a shirt. They wear a tank top.
That's odd.
They wear shorts and a tank top.
It needs to be equitable, like
right.
you said. Like, I don't mind either way.
Right.
But I feel like I don't necessarily want to see the man out there in a Speedo, though.
And some...
That's one thing I'd say.
Well, some of the women, 4 years ago, I don't know...
Didn't they protest, right?
Yeah, the track and field
team... they did.
...were way...
I thought they did that this year.
...way high cut.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're doing it again this year. I don't know.
Well, I thought that they protested about that
did
as
they?
Well.
Yeah.
Because it's... The men don't wear that.
No.
Yeah, it's odd. It is a little
it is,
odd.
It's a big double standard there.
Yeah, and you wonder, I haven't noticed, but I think it's other countries across the board. Like, we all do that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. No, it's not something that's just American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of interesting, I know you found Carol Goodman, her new book, interesting, Return to Wild Cliff Heights. So you tell us a little bit about this book.
So this book has such a great premise. In the early 90s, an author released a novel called Wild Cliff Heights. This book amassed such a crazy cult following that decades later, their New York City-based publishing company that released the book originally, they have an intern. Mm-hmm. It's a young woman named Agnes Corey, whose job it is to read and screen fan letters to this reclusive author. So she is still popular.
Oh, wow. That's
so quite shortly a job. After the book was published, this author survived a horrific fire and she was blinded and she has never written another book.
Oh.
So most of the fan letters that come into her are people begging her to write a sequel. So even though she knows she shouldn't, because her publisher did tell her, the person in charge of her, says, hey, don't send her the letters asking for a sequel, just send her the fan letters. Even though she knows she shouldn't, could be a fireable offense, probably would be a fireable offense, Agnes can't help herself because she's a huge fan. She writes a letter to this reclusive author,
okay,
begging for another book, and she puts it in the mail before she can think twice about it. Almost the very next day, she gets called into the publisher's office, sure she's being fired, only to learn the author has decided she wants Agnes to transcribe the book as she tells it to her.
Oh.
And she has sent for her to come the very next day.
That's called job security right there.
Yeah, it is. And she does think that too, because she'd kind of been, and there's money involved and lodging and food. So, I mean, it's a nice gig, especially for an intern. That, you know, those book interns in the publishing world.
Oh, you can't make any money.
Yeah, if you get paid anything, it's terrible. Yeah, and she does some slush pile reading, too. So, thrilled, also a little scared, Agnes takes the train out to a small village in the Hudson Valley area. If you've ever been to the Hudson Valley
beautiful
area outside of New York City, it is stunning. It's it's such a special place. And she walks to the gates of a crumbling estate that was once the home of a psychiatric hospital for wayward women.
Ooh.
And is also the home of the writer,
the author. Wow.
Veronica St. Clair. Awesome. So this book has all the trappings of gothic suspense with nods to the classic Jane Eyre. It's a fantastic addition to the world of gothic suspense.
Awesome. Very good. And we had a fantastic chat with Carol. So here now talking about her book, Return to Wild Cliff Heights. This is Carol Goodman.
She was a breeder, a retired breeder.
Oh, nice.
And so I adopted her when she was about 2 years old.
Ooh.
She has one eye. She was retired because she had a cataract, and eventually the eye failed and had to be removed. She is bald.
So you're telling me she's a beauty.
Oh, she sounds like a beauty.
We always like, you're still beautiful.
Oh, that's really funny. We are dealing with an Australian Shepherd poodle mix puppy right now.
Yeah, he's hiding under the, couch.
I wish we could have adopted at the age of two.
he is kicking our butt, let me tell you.
Oh my goodness, puppies are fun, but yes, they're a lot of work.
They are. I absolutely loved your book. Speaking of fun, I'll do that segue. Return to Wild Cliff Heights. With a great cover, too. A tale of mental hospitals, cult novels, and plenty of eyeliner. What inspired you to write this gothic tale?
I love the gothic. That I've been a fan since. I usually like to tell people, since I read Jane Eyre when I was 13. But the truth is, it's when I was 9 and watched Dark Shadows. You're probably too young.
We remember that.
So I love the gothic, and I knew I wanted to write something that had that atmosphere. I don't know. The story had been going around in my head for a long time. And I knew I originally called it the sequel, and it was about a young woman who, you know, is in publishing, working in publishing, and she goes up to this old house, and this she loves this book that this woman wrote years ago, mm-hmm. and you know, she gets the opportunity to go up there and help her write the sequel.
That's yeah, and that's kind of what this is too. Yeah, but I like this title a little better, probably more theatrical.
Well, the problem with the title, the sequel, which I knew right away, is that every time I said it, someone would say, "Oh, and the sequel to what?"
Yeah. That's true.
There are certain things you cannot title a book, and if it's not a sequel, you certainly cannot title it.
That is what I just. I thought it was rather clever, but it was like too a little too clever by half.
Too clever by half. But speaking of naming things, I do like names. I like names when names have great import, and mm-hmm. I love that your heroine Agnes Corey. That's
a
great
good name.
How does that work for you when you get to choose names? Are you thumbing through the phone books? Well, we don't have phone books anymore. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I still have baby name books. But I also go to Beyond the Name. That website is one I use.
That's good.
And I look for names all over the place. Agnes happens to be, and also since this is my 26th book,
wow.
I have to think, what have I used? What have I not used?
That's
yes.
a problem.
And I don't think I'd ever used Agnes for a main character. I may have used her for a minor. Happens to be my mother's middle name.
Oh, nice. Oh,
how about that?
I felt like I had a connection to it. Corey, Agnes Corey to me seemed like a name in a ballad or, you know,
yeah.
something.
Ooh,
yeah.
Does, there was yeah.
traditional
it
about it. I did go through a lot of options. Oh, so, and it sounded old fashioned.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
and not to give away any spoilers, but as we find out, there's a reason why it's such an old fashioned name. Where she got it from.
It also has like a, maybe because it's set in New England, it's set in the Hudson Valley area. It has like a, I don't know, Puritan type of sound, like
a witch trial.
Yeah.
There was a Corey in the...
Giles Corey.
Giles Corey. Right, right.
There you go.
The man who gets pressed to death.
That's right. More weight. Oh, that always...
Wow.
That always freaks
exactly.
me out. I can't
Good
even...
reference. Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
So it does have a New England-y...
Yeah.
New England will not include the Hudson Valley as part of it. I feel we're kind of. You
I
know,
think like, I feel like you are. We're out in Colorado. It seems like it's all together.
All together.
Yeah. And yeah. I love the estate that Agnes goes to become a. Okay. I'm gonna, wow. you know, I had
Give
this.
Uh-oh, here we go. Ramp
okay.
up to it.
I'm a little intimidated because your undergraduate degree, I believe, is in Latin. And I'm sure this is a Latin word that I am going to butcher.
Yes.
Amanuensis.
Amanuensis. There we go.
I did butcher it.
Yeah, you did.
And I've read the word before. You don't see it very often, but I've literally never said it up until just now, which I didn't do very well.
Amanuensis.
No, you are, because I actually looked up how to do it, and it was exactly like it's spelled. Amanuensis. For this reclusive writer, Veronica St. Clair, another fantastic name.
Another great name.
It's so creepy. And I was kind of curious. Did you base it off of any place in particular? Is it an amalgamation of a couple?
Amalgamation, but it definitely. Lucky to live here in the Hudson Valley, where there are just lots of moldering estates all over the place. And I actually, the first little spark of the place came from a house that's about half an hour from here up north on the river. I'm in Red Hook, which is near Rhinebeck, and I'll situate you in a moment. The town in my book is really based on Rhinecliff.
Mm-hmm.
I call it Wildcliff on Hudson.
Okay.
But it's
interesting.
Based on Rhinecliff, which is just a little south of me. But a little north of me, there was a house called the Dr. Oliver Bronson House. And it was on the grounds of the Refuge for Women in Hudson, which was founded in like 1887. And it was only the second women's prison in the entire country.
Wow.
And they called it a refuge. Interesting.
They called it a refuge.
Interesting.
I think is so interesting.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah.
Not a record.
No.
The opposite.
No.
Yes. And it's still, so the house, which is a historic society has taken it over, but they really haven't been able to renovate it. So it's just, it's very haunting. Like the wallpaper's peeling off the walls.
Wow. It has
a beautiful staircase. So the staircase in my wild clip definitely comes from that staircase, but also the sense that, so this was on the grounds of the Women's House of Refuge or Refuge for Women. It is now actually adjacent to a men's prison. There's still a prison on that location.
Interesting.
It's a men's prison. And you can see when you're there, you can look and you see the electrified fences.
Wow.
But it's not within. It's not within. You don't have to cross the electric fences to go in. So that had a lot of that place, although physically it doesn't quite resemble Wild Cliff, that was my first idea of like, what if somebody, that was the warden's house. So what if somebody grew up in a place where there was this women's institution, either a psychiatric hospital or something sort of in between being a psychiatric hospital and a prison. So that's where I think I start thinking about the whole background of Veronica St. Clair.
Oh, so good. There's also just such a long history of psychiatric hospitals, you know, run by men. And women who were, you know, forced into them for different reasons by a husband who maybe was ready for the new wife or forced to stay in them. Yes. And did you, have you done any research about that? Yeah.
I've always been interested in reading that history. I mean, I think from, I teach the story, The Yellow Wallpaper.
Oh, yeah.
And in that, the woman is, her husband has put her away in a room, we think in their house, we're not entirely sure, because she has postpartum depression, we realize, because eventually we find out she's just had a baby. And her cure is supposed to be that she just has to lie there and do nothing.
Ugh.
She's not allowed to write or read. I know. And this was a real cure. This was the doctor, Silas Weir, I think his name was, this was his rescuer for hysterical women. So there's that whole tradition of women, if they're not happy with their lot or, you know, this is where they end up. And this prison, this refuge in Hudson, what was quite interesting about it was that it was, it marked sort of a progressive movement towards better conditions for women. And, you know, let's not put them in the men's prison. Let's have a prison. And ideas about, like, you know, how do you get women off the street and, you know, who are streetwalkers in New York City and get them to reform.
And the
idea was you take them out of their environment and you put them up here and you keep them there for a long time. The women who were arrested for prostitution or loitering or, you know, maybe just drinking, suddenly ended up at this place. And instead of
in
like
the middle
six
of nowhere.
Months later, they were like, no, we're going to keep you here because it'll be better for you.
Wow.
And there was, and it was run by a woman. So there, you know, but, it, and it was this idea that this would be a more progressive, a better, and pretty soon they realized it wasn't really better.
Well, you can take the, you can take the woman out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the woman. Am I right?
People are running away. There are terrible stories of people, young girl, and this lasted, this, you know, it changes names, it becomes the I think the trainings, New York Training School for Girls. It was still around in the 70s. Girls were still being put there, and I knew I have a friend who grew up in this area who went and taught dance, like in the 60s. She taught dance to a group of girls there, and she said, oh, it's like the little houses where they were, how the place, they were like in little cottages. They called them cottages, but the buildings were like horrible. They were like moldy.
You do a real good book.
You got me started.
No, I love that because you bring up a lot of that in your book, in this book. There's a lot of that kind of threaded throughout. It's so interesting that that was still going on. Yeah.
Yes, that's the thing that I guess that always shocks me is things that we think of as sort of like, oh, you know, in the Victorian era, they did this. How long those things lasted and how, you know, and that they were going on in America as well as, you know, England or, you know, that this stuff really is not that far away. That
no.
It's, you know, still part of our history.
Yeah.
And I wanted to relate that to Agnes. Of course, she is somebody who's grown up in the foster care system. So she is in sort of the descendant of that, you know, that kind of welfare system.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And her running away constantly and, you know, issues, and you can't blame her. I mean, that instinct to run with her was interesting because it was constant. It was like, okay, now's the time, I got to go. And I was like, yeah, go, Agnes, go. Go to Canada.
Well, let's talk. Listen, I love food in books, and I'm always highly attuned to what's going on in with the food situation in books. And you described some delectable lunch baskets in this one. Sandwiches, thermoses with coffee. They sound amazing.
Your lunch baskets were like... What do we gotta do?
Can you send us out one of those lunch baskets?
Well, that is also based on an experience. I went to a much nicer experience than the. although I'll tell you that I love that house up there, Dr. Oliver Bronson House. But I went quite a few years ago now. I think it was in 2014. I was lucky enough to go to an artist residency in Scotland.
Oh, wow! Nice.
And they delivered a lunch basket every day.
Wow.
So that came from.
That's a good detail. Did you, at those writing retreats, do you get a lot of work done? Is it more like just kind of fun to meet other people? How does that work?
It's supposed to be that you get, so you're supposed to be working. You got to hang out with people at night, which was nice, but you're supposed to, 9 to 5 is supposed to be quiet hours. and I got a lot of work done.
Oh, that's good.
Eat a lot of shortbread. Did you get some shortbread cookies over there?
There would be, not only we got the lunch basket, which would have a thermos of soup in it, which was good because even though it was May, it was a castle in Scotland, it was freezing.
You gotta have sweaters, you know.
There was a radiator, but you would turn it all the way up and you have to put your feet on it to feel anything coming from it. But then there was, down the hall, there was like a little tea station where they would leave short and cookies and different things like that.
Nice.
So yes, that was delightful.
I'd
like to go back.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing.
Sounds great.
Yeah,
that's the genesis of the. Because when you were saying food, I was thinking, I too like. I can't stand books where people never eat.
Right, I know exactly. Come on.
I know. I'm a person who, you know, basically has to have 3 meals a day, and so I'm like. You know, it's like, oh, I couldn't eat. I'm like, what? I don't understand. No. You know, I know someone's chasing you, but there's time to stop.
Yeah. I love Don Winslow. I love his books, but I've been reading a lot of him lately. I've noticed, like, in almost every one of his books, he's got, they're going to McDonald's. And it's just one more reason why he's just the best.
That's funny. Yeah. That's really cute. You have some really fun style talk in here, too, which I liked. I'm going to quote you. Old school hipsters who fetishize the trappings of an analog era, which I thought was a really wonderful line.
That's great.
And there's young women at this publishing company that wear kind of stylized librarian outfits, which I used to do when I was younger, and I had a lot of fun doing it. Maybe I could do it now, but I feel like I'm past that point in the age. But you know how that goes.
I love the retro library.
It's such a cute look. And then you've also got the 90s era goth punk scene.
Uh-huh.
Was all that fashion kind of fun to write about? You did a nice job with it.
Thank you. It was fun. And, you know, I am really too old to have partaken in the... I do remember I lived in New York City in the 80s, so I did.
Oh wow!
You know, I did see the.
Oh yeah, I bet you did.
Awesome.
But I had to do a lot of research because I was not really, you know, hanging out at the punk clubs in the 90s or early 2000s. So I did try to look at what people were wearing, and I looked up bands, and that was fun. I mean, that might have been harder for me than like the kind of Victorian house stuff. But there too, I had a great location to guide me. The hotel, what I call the Josephine, is based on the Jane Hotel, which is in New York, and it's right. It's over on the west side, West Village, or even like a little further than the West Village, looks over the Hudson. And it was originally the, I can never get this title right, but it was built for sailors. It was like the Sailor's Friend Seaman's Institute or something like that in 1908. I just looked this up recently because I was doing a little blog piece on it. But then in the 90s, it was a punk rock venue.
I bet that was cool.
In this very beautiful, faded old lounge. And it was where the play Hedwig and the Angry Itch.
That's so cool.
So I really kind of like focused on that as... you know, I give it a different history and I give it more of a social, like a settlement house history, which I thought more, but it, you know, it was, I've seen that hotel. I visited it in I wasn't there quite in the 90s, but early 2000s when it was still a SRO, a single room occupancy, like a welfare hotel, where they had, you know, the beautiful Art Deco lobby had plexiglass around the front. For safety's sake. RuPaul lived there. I think late 80s.
New York in the 80s. What a time to have lived there with the graffiti and the trains and.
And that would have been through, like, I remember the meatpacking district when there was meat hanging. Whereas now there's, you know, like beautiful, you know, cute little boutiques.
Everywhere. Nice restaurants. It's very, what do you say? Gentrified.
Right.
Incredibly gentrified now.
Back when Hell's Kitchen was Hell's Kitchen, for God's sakes. Like, Chelsea, come on.
Yes, exactly. Hell's Kitchen is not.
That's really interesting.
So, the novel that your story is centered around, Wildcliff Heights, love a book about a book. This book was a cult favorite. And I'm wondering, did you have, you know, reading up, growing up, was there a book that was special to you or had some kind of special significance?
Well, you know what? I love all the, again, that Gothic tradition right through the 60s where there are all the books with the, you know, the girl and the, flimsy
or the chemise
running away from a castle. This is terrified. I could go a few of those. I didn't, I mean, Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier is really the start of, you know, from Jane Eyre, then you get Rebecca in the in the 30s, and then you get all these Gothic romance novels. So you get Victoria Holt, and Phyllis Whitney, and you get
I grew up reading those.
Exactly. So I was thinking about them. But again, like my real Gothic, you know, if you were to sort of talk about like goth, little trashy Gothic stuff, it's really Dark Shadows. And I still have the Dark Shadows books. Those actually do look also like those kind of, you know, Gothic, you know, covers that I described.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So I wasn't thinking of any specific book. I did, you know, go back and read more. I think actually of that kind of genre, the writer I like the best is Mary Stuart.
Oh, yeah.
She wrote more. Yeah. She wrote those Arthurian books.
I've read her Arthurian books.
I love those. Those are still my favorite.
Yeah, I do too.
And those I read first, actually.
Forgotten all
so
about her.
I wasn't a big Gothic romance reader when I was
growing
up.
Yeah.
But I kind of came to love it just in the whole tradition of Gothic.
Oh, that's
and then
awesome.
I read it. So I was looking at those books, trying to imagine exactly what the original Secret of Wildcliff Heights, what that book would have been like.
I feel like Gothic suspense is back in style. And I don't know, like, what, I'm sure there's something socioeconomic, historical, that people would say, oh, well, when this happens, This becomes popular. I don't know what that is.
I just had a question on some Q&A I was given. Mm-hmm. You know, why do you think Gothic is popular now? I kind of feel like Gothic is always with us. But I think it has to do with buried secrets and the idea of the past sort of resurfacing. Mm-hmm. And I just think we're always contending with that.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Dealing with the things we, you know, those buried secrets and bad history that we haven't quite dealt with. That's always sort of poking.
It's constant.
And then it's just fun. I think that it's a good way of, I think it both has that sense of escape, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of fun to let yourself, you know, read something that feels kind of other and imaginative, but also then deals with these themes of, you know, having to go into the dark to discover yourself,
yeah.
you know, having to go through this journey. So you get both things.
And a lot of it deals with women's issues too, yeah. which I mm-hmm. think is really appealing. Yeah.
All right.
Certainly that's the kind of Gothic I like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Carol, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go.
Oh, no.
What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Ooh. Ripley.
Oh, everyone keeps saying that.
Yeah, we
to
gotta
us,
watch
and
that.
We keep forgetting to watch
yeah.
it. Gotta
yeah.
watch
yeah.
that. Yeah.
The Talented Mr. Ripley, the new one with Andrew Scott. Yeah. Gorgeous Italian black and white scenery.
Oh, loved wow. it. Okay, that's all.
Wait, hold on. Is it in black and white, Carol?
It is in black and white. That would be a breaker for you. Gorgeous black and white.
All right, if it's shot in gorgeous, luminous black and white, maybe I can get into it.
Oh, it's really cool. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's funny. We ask this question of every writer, but I saw on Goodreads that someone had already asked this of you.
Oh.
But maybe you have a different answer now.
Mm.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
What?
Fictional world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, I have no idea what I answered.
Before. Oh, okay. Let's see if it's the same. I'll tell you if it's the same.
Maybe it would be... Well, I think I might have answered Victorian England at some point.
No,
I don't
but
know
that's
if
great.
That's what I,
answered. I like that.
But lately, I've been watching a lot of Agatha Christie, and I feel like if I could walk into like a set of Poirot.
Yes, the set of Poirot.
I want to go to. Wow. I just watched. My husband and I have been rewatching these episodes for the second time. I should have mentioned that. That could have been my answer too. The David Suchet Poirot's, and last night we finished watching one that's set at her house in Greenway.
Wow.
In southern England.
Wow.
So if I could just sort of walk into the 1930s world of with Poirot and sort of go along with him on one of his investigations and not be a murder victim.
Yeah, that's the key.
That is the key.
That's the key.
I'm starting to think about this and like, this could be dangerous.
It's always dangerous to go into these fictional worlds.
I mean, there's much more interesting when there's a little danger inherent in the situation.
I guess so. I think that's my new choice.
Okay. I love that choice.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What was
said the Shire.
Oh, the Shire. Which, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean like in the
Middle Earth? Yeah, Middle Earth.
Oh, that was a good answer.
Yeah, it was a good answer. Yeah.
She's pleased with her answers.
I know. I like
glad
this.
That you're pleased
I like
with
this
your
about
answers.
You.
How about this, Carol? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
Oh gosh, because the immediate one that came to mind is so obvious.
That's okay.
Oh, that's all right.
It was Casablanca.
Oh, no, that's a great one.
Yeah.
So, you know, Casablanca. But also, I guess, more in the mood that we're talking about, maybe Rebecca.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen
that
movie.
I want one more chance. The Uninvited.
Oh, which one is it?
1930s ghost story. So,
wow.
You're not going to say that. The Uninvited.
That's a vampire one, right?
No, it's not.
Oh.
You would think, yeah, it's a ghost story set in Cornwall.
Wow, right. I feel like that's a Jennifer McMahon book, so I'm confused.
Mm. Yeah. It's the same title.
Yeah, that is a great title, though. I need to go check that out.
And I did kind of, I wrote a book called The Disinvited.
I did,
my real title was The Disinvited, and with, you know, an homage to, the book is by... I think her name is McFarland. It's like a 1930s book, a really great ghost story. And so originally my title was The Disinvited, but then I changed it to The Disinvited Guest.
Oh, that's a really famous one of yours. Cool. Yeah, yeah. How about one of your favorite books?
My absolute favorite book in the world is Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Yeah. But then I would add to something more modern. I'm looking at The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one.
Rebecca.
Yeah. I've never seen the movie Rebecca. I just read the book.
Yeah.
It was a Hitchcock movie that Hitchcock didn't like.
Oh, right.
It's good.
Okay. Good.
What does Hitchcock know? I mean,
I used to love.
Well, sometimes our writers,
they don't understand why.
You can't always trust their own verdict.
No.
You can't. Stephen King, I think he said his favorite book of his, I think at one point I was like, the book is terrible. I can't remember. It was maybe like, it was one of his lesser known books, but I don't remember which one
really?
It was.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I like Stephen King.
I love Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. Can't get enough. How about this? Give us, do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No. I have never sung karaoke in my entire life, and nor do I ever intend to.
That's really funny.
Fair enough.
All right.
You're like, no. I know. And last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
Oh, I am reading a book by actually a writer I know. It's called Agony Hill by Sarah Stewart Taylor.
Ooh.
And she is a Vermont author, one of my favorite authors. And this is her brand new book that's coming out in August.
Wow.
So I didn't mean to do a promotion, but
yeah.
That's
a great title.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing about this book is that if you open, and I'm going up to Vermont and doing a event with her.
Oh, nice.
In August. Yeah. And the other thing I have to say about this book is if you open it up and it has a map in it, and the map was drawn by my daughter.
Hey. Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Hey,
is your daughter awesome. An artist or an illustrator?
Yes. She's an illustrator and a cartoonist and aspiring graphic novel writer.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah.
You ever try to give her advice and she's like, Mom, stop.
I often say, you could do a cartoon about this, and she'll say, write a novel about it.
That's awesome.
Well,
Carol,
really funny.
Thanks so much for joining us. We love your book.
Oh, Return to this World. This was lots of fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Enjoy. Go pet that poodle.
Yes.
I will do that. And good luck with your.
Oh yeah, thanks.
Dog poodle mix. That's
Aussie,
quite a mix.
Aussie doodle. Yeah.
Aussie
doodle. Yeah. Mostly poodle. He's mostly poodle. Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
It was lovely meeting you.
Nice to meet you.
Well.
Bye.
Right. Bye.
The
Inside Flip. Alrighty, there you go. Thank you so much to Carol Goodman for joining us. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, I thought you were.
Nope, I was sitting up.
Just sitting up.
Just sitting up.
You're like, okay, episode's over.
My laptop's about to die.
Gotcha.
So.
Alright, anyway, check out our book, Return to Wildcliff Heights. And we will see you later on this week for another episode, a full episode with Andrew Dowd and our book recommendations, more book recommendations. Until then, see ya.
Adios.
How about you take the shirt off?